bothered giving up the chance of a silver medal when I decided to run the marathon. So I was thinking, as the pack started at 10, I was thinking 10th. As it dropped to 9, I was thinking 9. And at one stage, I was thinking 3rd when there was only 3 of us there.
Hi, I'm Fitzy, and welcome to Fit Conversations. Joining me today is marathon runner Steve Monteghetti. He's a four-time Olympian and represented Australia at 4 Commonwealth Games, winning gold, silver and 2 bronze medals, along with bronze at the 1997 World Championships. In 1991, he set the course record for Sydney's iconic City to Surf, which still stands today. Since retiring as a competitor, he has helped steer Australia to Commonwealth Games success as the chef de mission at the last 3 Commonwealth Games. Welcome, Steve Monteghetti.
Good to be here, Fitzy. Good, mate. You know, I look at those results and that's what people want to know, but it's the behind the scenes stuff that gets those results that's important. More of, you know, the training, the preparation, the support, you know, the history of how that would unravel is, you know, the thing that, you know, I'm most proud of and most interested in talking about, because that's the lessons that everybody can do. You know, a person out there might be listening and say, wow, that's just amazing, that record, I can never do that. But I never thought I could do that either. But by having a passion for what I do, running, and just working hard at it, that's the outcome. So that's the list of achievements, but they only result from the dedication and passion that you have for something.
And they really only scratch the surface as well as, you know, what you have achieved. But I want to take you back to 1986, Edinburgh Commonwealth Games. You're a 23-year-old?
About to turn 24. I think I might have even turned 24 over there during the Games, I think.
But you went over for the 10,000 metres and you finished fifth in that. Mm-hmm. But then you ran your first marathon at those Games, didn't you?
Yeah, so it's sort of an unusual story because I just qualified for the 10K. I love this is what I speak about. You know, I snuck into the Commonwealth Games. I reckon I was the last person selected because I nobody knew me. I was just a quiet kid, not that good on the track. And I, in a Vic title race in January, I snuck under the qualifying time, and that got me selected. I wasn't guaranteed of getting selected, but I remember I was over at the World Cross Country, and Pat Cloese sent me a note saying congrats, and I got home and I cut the little bit out of the, I think it was, I'm not sure what paper it was in, of the team, and had my name in the team. And for me, that was a significant moment because I'd been selected in my first Games team. And a few months out from that competition, so this was sort of I qualified in January, the World Cross Country was in March, and then in April, my coach, Chris Wardlaw, who'd been to a couple of Olympics and he's a very wise person, looked at the team and he saw there were only 2 spots in the men's marathon team, and he rang me up and said, oh, look, do you want me to talk to Athletics Australia and see if we can get you in the marathon? The 10K was 6 days before, so we made a judgment call that, you know, that was my main focus, but then why not just jump in the marathon, because I intended being a marathon runner. That was a plan, and this was a chance just to sort of probably have a little bit of an experience at it, see how I went.
So talk us through that day.
Well, interesting day, and the thing I significantly remember is up until that point in my running career, I'd always had an excuse. So I'd always, if I had a bad run, I'd kind of go, oh, that doesn't matter because I'm going to be a marathon runner eventually. And if I had a good run, I'd sort of play it all down and just go, oh, yeah, it's all just part of the overall plan. Suddenly, I remember being in the call room that day thinking, oh, gee, this is it. If I don't get this right, this is what I've hung my career on. Gee, I hope this goes well. And then the other funny story I like telling is it was the first event that day in Edinburgh, and the coverage had just started and had big screens in the call room. And just as I'm about to go out onto the track to run my first ever marathon, the last vision they showed was the 84 Olympic Games, which is the most recent Games prior to those 86 Com Games. And they had the women's marathon, and there's, I don't know if people will remember, but a lady from, I think from Switzerland, called Gabrielle Anderson Swice, was staggering down the straight because the weather was quite hot and humid. There was a lot of controversy about whether they should have stopped her, the mental damage and trauma that she'd had that was irreparable, all that. I'm about to go out to run my first marathon. That's the last thing I see. And I turned over to Chris Wardlaw and said, just book a room in the Edinburgh Hospital. That might be me in a couple of hours' time. But obviously it turned out well. And, you know, in the race, I had no comprehension of how I was going. Deke was out the front, pretty clear, winning all the way, broke away pretty early. And I just sort of hung in with the group and just got going a little bit. And we got sort of to the second half of the race, and suddenly we ran past the guy who was second, and I'm running along with a Canadian guy in second and third position. I'm thinking, how good's this? And got a bit tired near the end, but just that the momentum of knowing I could win a medal just kept me going, and I hung in there and ended up winning a bronze medal and running 2:11, which was still a pretty well-regarded time. And I only ever ran 2:08, so I only improved 3 minutes over about 20 years. So, and that was the fastest debut by an Australian ever at the time, and I think a couple of guys have ran quicker than that on debut now, but still holds up pretty well.
Let's go back to your professional career. What did fitness and health and training look like as an elite marathon runner?
Honestly, it was pretty simple. I got up, I ran, I came home, I ate, I sometimes slept during the day, I ran again in the afternoon, I ate, and I went to bed. That was probably about it. And, you know, often, you know, people tell me, they say, oh, you know, because I was running twice a day every day of the year, basically. So
what
that
sort
was
of
my
distance?
Life. 200 Ks a week, about 8,000 kilometres a year. So you'd freshen up a little bit for a race. And, you know, I tell people the day before the Olympic marathon, I'd go out and I'd run, you know, 7 or 8K. But that for me, that was like having a day off because I only ran once. And your body just gets, it's all relative. So that was having as a big rest for my body. But, you know, that's the type of pressure and expectation I was putting on my body. So I was wearing my body out. And people will say, oh, what about cross-training? Have you ever done 200 Ks a week? The only cross-training I was doing was sleeping. That was to catch up. So, you know, I find it, and I don't want to make a big deal of it, but running's a very specific exercise. So I was doing a lot of running, and I didn't do a lot of rehab, recovery. I was hardly ever injured. So I just did the running, and, you know, I'd get physio a couple of times a week just to keep on top of any niggles. They didn't really turn into many injuries. So I just had a really almost boring training regime. But it was highlighted by then I'd be going to something really exciting in 3 or 4 months. So there was always that incentive to keep training. And whilst it was routine, then I had the excitement of big races just on the horizon, and that kept me motivated.
Nutrition, like we're not learning any secrets out. You're about 60 kilos,
yeah,
if that. Was nutrition an important part?
Not at all. Not at all. And the thing with running such high mileage is you need the just to eat food. So I was eating rubbish, any food, because, you know, again, I say to people, you know, if you're eating sugar, sugar gets converted to glycogen if you're exercising. If you don't, it gets turned to fat. So it's sugar probably is bad for you. But in my case, sugar's not bad for you because I'm converting it to energy. But sugar's bad for you if you do nothing, because it sits there and then, you know, turns to fat or something, or becomes becomes a problem for you. So the amount of exercise I was doing meant that I didn't have to be conscious of my diet. I'm far more conscious of my diet now because I'm eating for health and longevity now. Then I was eating for performance. So the only thing I would do differently I'd eat carbohydrates because the food that I need to keep my glycogen stores up. So leading into a race, I would freshen up a little bit in my training, eat more pasta, rice, so that my fuel tank of glycogen was full, and that's what I would use to get through the marathon so I didn't hit the wall effectively.
So I know we talked about retirement, but you're effectively still competing at times.
Yes.
What does fitness and training look like for you now?
Well, at the moment, I'm in rehab because I keep tearing my calf. But up until, I mean, I broke an age world record about 6 months ago. So I've been able to stay in pretty good shape. But I'm running 70, 80 kilometres a week. So, you know, less than half of what I was doing. But and I'm still trying to do it at quite a fast speed. So I train with some elite guys here. So guys who go to world championships, national level athletes and state athletes. So that keeps me fast and young, but it does put a bit of pressure on my body. So I might skip a few sessions. They probably do 2 or 3 sessions a week. I might only do one. I might race intermittently. And I'm definitely, you know, finding now, as I say, I keep tearing my calf. So I've probably got old man's calf, and I'm doing rehab now to try and stop that. I kept doing it, so I'd do a bit of running, and it'd get sore. I'd have a bit of physio and treatment, and I'd get right again, but then I'd tear it again. So I was kind of, I've got to the stage now where I say, well, I'm either going to get this fixed or I'm going to stop, because, you know, I enjoy running, but I have a passion for it and enjoyment for it. As soon as I lose that enjoyment, I don't want to do it anymore. I mean, I'd love to do it for all of my life, but unfortunately, because I'm so competitive, I push hard. If you push hard, you wear your body out, and I'm proud of that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I reckon that's a good thing, and not enough people push hard in life. So for me to still be pushing, I quite enjoy that competitive aspect.
Aside from running, nowadays, other activities?
Not much still. I mean, I ride. I'm often now on the mountain bike riding beside my group because I love the social side. So I don't coach any. I advise a couple of them, but I don't directly coach them. But I ride beside them to keep up and to be involved in the conversation. Because for me, it's really socially very good. And, you know, again, you know, I don't want to harp back on social media and all that thing, but I think we're losing strong relationship and friendships and communication by talking, like exactly like we're doing now. And that allows me to continue to do that. I do a bit of swimming just for I'm rehabbing now, doing a swimming program. I'm actually in the rehab pool with people looking at me kind of going, what are you doing here? But, you know, it's just part of what I'm doing to try and overcome this niggle or this chronic injury that's stopping me running. So I only do those cross-training things and other things because I can't run. If you run, I am still running enough, I don't need to do a lot of other exercise. We've got a couple of dogs. I might walk the dogs with Tanya and have a chat, and I enjoy that, getting out. But generally, I still just want to run.
Would you say that consistent activity, no matter what level it is important?
Very much. The routine, and this is what I say to people. I have so many people, you know, ask advice. They say, oh, yeah, look, I'd like to, but I can't fit it in. Everyone can fit it in. Do not give me that you cannot fit exercise in. And I tell, and you know, I used to say the story, and I think it's still relevant now, by wasting half an hour exercising, you actually get more out of your day. So you save time. I know, and that's why I like to say the word, it's wasting half an hour, because everyone says, oh, I can't fit it in. Oh, that, I could be doing so much more. No, you couldn't. By exercising, you become so much more efficient in what you do. So many people just waste time now today. They think they're doing important stuff, but they're not doing it as efficiently as what they could. And exercise, clearing your mind, great for your mental health and physically just having more energy and being aware of your body. I love exercise allows you to understand your body better. What we're doing now in life, it can sound like I'm preaching here, but like we become dependent on specialists. So, you know, we'll go and see an expert. An expert will tell me how to run. An expert will tell me how to eat. An expert will tell me what's wrong with me. You know what? Effectively, you know your body better than anybody. So experts are good as a reference point, but ultimately you should own your body and own your decision making. And until we get back to that, you know, we're going to be outsourcing everything, and you're not in control of your own destiny. So why would you want to? You know, I'm a control freak, obviously. I think people would realize that, but I'm kind of quite proud of that, because at least then, you know, I look at all those resources that are out there and then I adapt them to my personal situation. And, you know, that's, we need to get back to that. It's, you know, it's taking ownership of your decision making. You know, people talk to me about Com Games being the chef and the leadership positions, and that I'm no leader. I wasn't born a leader. I just you know, I'm interested in learning and analysing and helping people, and that, and grouping people around and getting people involved and bringing people along for the ride. So that has allowed me to just you know, get in positions where people respect my opinion, and hopefully you know, they benefit from it, and the community that I'm involved in benefits as well.
So if someone's sitting there listening going, I'm not fit, you know, maybe I want to be, or, you know, I don't have time, what would you say to them?
I would say, firstly, do you want the social experience or do you not? Because that will dictate what exercise you probably want to do. So if you're talking all day at work, you might actually want to just get out and clear your head and talk to nobody. But if you're not, if you're stuck in a environment where you're not having a lot of personal interaction, then team sports, that social interaction will be really important, and sport provides that. And sport at all levels, you don't have to be good. You know, it's inclusive. That's what I love about sport. There is a sport for everybody. Then once you've decided that, then it's what you feel you're comfortable with. I can't swim. I swim like a rock. I've got zero body fat. I sink. It's hard work for me. I don't choose to swim. I do it because I see it as important in rehab. So that wouldn't be a sport that I would choose. And, it, you know, I love a chat. So swimming's a bit you don't talk a lot when you're swimming. So, okay, so I'm thinking that's not a sport for me. But then you say, well, aerobically, I'm very strong, I'm lightly built, I'm easy frame. So any load-bearing exercise is fine for me. So that's where running fits perfectly. I don't find it all that difficult to do. So, and I like the social interaction. So you wrap all of that up and you say, well, I'd join a running group. There's plenty of running groups out there now. So that's what I would choose to do. And then, you know, then it's a matter of, do you want to, are you doing it to get better? Then you need to start saying, okay, or am I doing it so I can eat and drink what I like? So is it a fitness thing? Is it a health thing, as someone said? Or am I deciding, gee, I need to get a bit healthier because I'm struggling to walk up the stairs? Well, then they're the boxes you need to think about. So that will then dictate what exercise you do and to what extent and how often. And that's probably, you know, enough to get you going. And there is no sport that you can't do at varying levels. And, you know, you need to understand that. And people say, you know, I can't run. Yes, you can. You just haven't done it in the slow capacity to get you from a walk to a run and got through those first few months when it can seem difficult.
A genuine all-round good bloke, champion marathon runner, Steve Montaghetti. Thanks for joining us for Fit Conversations.
Thanks, Fitzy.